Welcome to Christmas Clatter, the podcast that celebrates everything that makes Christmas special. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Email us at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com or visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. Hi, and welcome again to Christmas Clatter. I'm Todd Killian. Well, it's December 1st, finally. Last month of the year. Hopefully better things are in store for next year, but more on that as the month winds up. Just 25 days until Christmas, 24 days till Christmas. So everybody hopefully starting your Advent calendars today if you do those. I know me and my youngest one, mainly my youngest one, or mainly me, are starting a Lego Friends calendar. We'll be doing that when she gets home from school later today, and that should be exciting. If you haven't checked out our new website, head over to ChristmasClatterPodcast.com and check it out. There's a free email newsletter you can sign up for called Clatter Chatter. That will be starting in January, and I'll have more on that here in a couple weeks as we approach Cookie Day. That may be a hint to something in store for the newsletter, Clatter Chatter. When I was deciding to revamp the website and different things, I won't go into it, all the details and bore you with that, but I looked at, I'm not that much of a tech guy. I'd like to be, but for whatever reason, I'm not. I could get by, but I looked at all the website makers and things like that out there, and I settled on Wix, making a Wix site. If you listen to any kind of podcasts, you'll hear Wix. They're all over the place, and this isn't an advertisement for Wix, but I found they were best to use for me, and I just wanted to say thank you to a YouTube channel out there called Wix Fix. And their website is yourwixfix.com, and Craig runs it. It's a small YouTube channel, but Craig has been so helpful in helping me get started on Wix. Wix is easy to use, but I just needed a little bit of a primer on the pump, if you will, and Craig has been excellent. So if this COVID year has your side hustle up a little bit more and you're willing to expand or you need a new website for anything, I encourage you, if you choose Wix, to head over to the Wix Fix YouTube channel and yourwixfix.com. And he's got some great tutorials that will help you get started on that and make the process even easier. Now, this isn't a commercial, but he's helped me so much, I figured I'd just put that out there for you guys to take a listen to and see if it's something that could help you. It helped me, and I just want to share that with all of you. According to the Postal Service, December 18th is the cutoff date to get priority mail before Christmas. I think it's the 17th for first class mail. That's all good and everything a week before Christmas, but however, being with the Postal Service for over 15 years, I personally feel it's a bit optimistic. I've seen the changes in parcel volumes and how COVID has affected the workforce. I would feel comfortable making my deadline for first class and priority mail the 14th of December instead of the 17th and 18th respectively. I'd feel better with those dates if I were you, and better safe than sorry, I'd stick with the 14th. And the worst that could happen is your gifts arrive or are delivered just a couple days before Christmas, and at least they could sit under the tree for that amount of time. And for our episode today, we're going to travel across the pond and talk to Adam, the host of a podcast called Merry Britmas. Merry Britmas is a brilliant podcast, and it's a lot, I don't want to say it's a lot like Christmas Clatter, but he just celebrates everything that makes Christmas special in England, and it gives me as an American a different view on Christmas and a better understanding of some of their traditions and things that kind of we half know but half don't know. And it's just nice to hear his perspective and learn a lot. Adam's a super great guy. All the information for Merry Britmas is in the show notes, and I encourage each and every one of you to check it out. So without any further ado, here is my Christmas conversation with Adam Seibun. Well, making his Christmas clatter debut is Adam from Merry Britmas. Adam's been at the podcasting for Christmas for, what has it been, Adam, close to a year or better now?
It's been a couple of years, but my very first year was sparse, I'd say, only a couple of episodes. I've definitely picked up in the last year.
First time I discovered you, I think it was through Dwayne on Tinseltoon sent me a link to your podcast and enjoyed it ever since. You kind of just talk about Christmas in the UK and it's a real treat, especially me being here in the States, getting to hear Christmas from a little bit different perspective. What inspired you to start Merry Britmas?
Well, it was a combination of things, really. So it all started, a couple of years ago, and I'd spent a year or two listening to or getting into podcasting generally. It was something that I'd sort of never really listened to many podcasts, listened to a lot of music more so, but then a couple of friends recommended some comedy podcasts and history podcasts that I listened to. And then I sort of stumbled upon, I think the first Christmas one was Tim Babb's Can't Wait for Christmas. And pretty much around that same time, I think Tis the Podcast and Christmas Past all just seemed to hit my, ears at the same time. And I quickly got quite obsessed with those. I've been a Christmas fanatic as far back as I can remember. My parents, or my mother mainly, has made me a bit of a Christmas obsessive. So even though it was June or July when I first heard both of those podcasts, I was like, that's it. This is my weekly listening now. And all through the year, I think it was 2 years ago, I kept thinking, maybe I could do my own Christmas podcast. Maybe. But I just couldn't think of what to talk about, really. I thought, these guys talk about film so well, and Tim's so funny and talks about all different things. And I just couldn't quite find a way to make a sort of particular niche, I suppose, for myself. And then it sort of just came to me as I was listening to more of these, and more Christmas podcasts started to appear in my podcast feed as well. These are all Americans. These are all people that are giving a very American Christmas point of view, especially. So a lot of the specials and things were ones I'd never seen or never heard of because they just weren't very popular over here. And so I was watching them for the first time, and I thought, well, they never really cover any of the British classics, the things that maybe I would see as my traditional Christmas TV or films. So I thought, oh well, okay, that's it, that's the one I'm aiming for, then that's my podcast, is me talking about all the British Christmas stuff that all of these guys just don't have any knowledge of or awareness of, and maybe hopefully bringing other people around the world an awareness of Christmas traditions, Christmas TV and Christmas music that might have just bypassed them or not have been as big in those countries. So that was my, my little spark moment. And then I spent a couple of months trying to furrow together lots and lots of ideas and hash it out. Originally, it was just going to be Christmas TV, British Christmas TV. And then I thought, well, I don't know if I'll have enough to talk about there. Mm-hmm. So how about I do a song? And then I thought, how about I just chuck in a tradition as well? So it just became this little trifecta. Then I recorded a couple for that very first year, 2 years ago, and sort of didn't think much of it, just did it as sort of for fun. But then got more listeners than I thought, not massive amounts, but more than just two friends and my mom or something. And so the next year kept going.
That seems like a real similar story to mine. You just kind of found a few Christmas podcasts and it's the same one. And it's just kind of like, well, there's a little bit here I like to cover that's not being represented as much as far as Christmas, because there's just so much Christmas stuff to unpack. And speaking of like Christmas traditions and things like that, I mentioned on the show before that you inspired me this year to try a mince pie, which is a new tradition I have of trying something different that's Christmas food related that I haven't before. Last year I did the fruitcake.
Yeah, how was that? How was the fruitcake?
I did not care for it.
Not many people do.
No, I could see, it's kind of like one of those weird things where it's when I was eating it, I could see why people would like it.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it myself.
No, I'm not the biggest fan of fruitcake, to be honest. I've had decent, well, again, I'm a gluten-free as well. I'm celiac. So my Christmas snacks have to be very specially chosen. And I did have some gluten-free Christmas fruitcake a few years ago. And yeah, it's very heavy, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I think that was the main problem for me. It was sort of a stodgy chaos of cake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was just too much going on, you know, with it, and too many different textures. And I just, it was fine. I don't want to say it was bad, but it's nothing I would seek out.
Not the top of the list. No.
Yeah, it's probably like in 2 or 3 years, I'll probably kind of half forget about what it tasted like and probably have another real thin piece and that do me again. But I did hunt down some mince pies, and I do quite like those a lot.
Good. I've got one actually here right now. Literally ready for a tweet in a little bit.
Yeah.
I've got through, I think I'm onto my, I've never actually made them myself, which is something that I would like to do 1 year, but I'm too lazy really with that sort of stuff. I'm not a very good cook. I like to just go buy things and eat them. But I've got through, I think I'm on my fourth or fifth pack of mince pies already, a pack of four. So I've eaten quite a lot already, and it's not even December yet.
Yeah, we were at a store up in the St. Louis, the World Foods. And I think they had a 8-pack of them. And I bought those, and I don't have any left, I don't think. And my wife tried one, and my youngest one tried one, and then the rest have been on me. So
they are quite Moorish after you know. They're sort of a perfect sort of snack sized as well, you know, just a little round, few bites, and they're gone.
Yeah, that's the thing I like about them. It's like a fruitcake is like an investment, because they, you know, there's the smallest section they sell them in those little rectangle shaped logs,
little squares.
It's going to take a while to get through those. Whereas the mince pies, it's just a little pie and then you're done, you know.
I often, especially around Christmas, I usually have at least one a day, because I take them for my work break. So I have a morning work break, and it's perfect time there just to have a cup of tea. And a little mince pie in the morning just sees me through. It gives me that little festive kick to get on with the rest of the day. Have you tried Christmas pudding yet? Is that popular over there? I'm not sure.
No, it's not. And that's probably going to be on my list for next year if I don't get to it this year. Just try the Christmas pudding.
Yeah, I need to do an episode about it. I think I prefer Christmas pudding to mince pies sometimes. But Christmas pudding is a bit more of a investment. You've got to sort of, you know, prepare it. It's best to have it with something like custard or ice cream or something like that. And obviously this is a bit of a tradition, you know, for the Christmas one, to light it on fire here with some brandy butter and light it on fire. And it looks amazing, but just a little bit more work than just popping a mince pie out of a pack and on the side.
Yeah, I definitely have to try that for sure, and expand my horizons a little bit on those things, because they're all things that you always see and hear around Christmas time, you know, they'll talk about them on Christmas specials or some versions of Christmas Carol things, but they're just kind of nothing we relate to around here, at least where, I'm stuck right in the middle of the States. Everything has to go through the filter of New York and LA before it gets to me even. So.
I talking of that sort of, trying new things, I really want to try eggnog this year. It's something that I've never, ever had. Again, just don't really have it here in the UK. I think I've seen it once in a shop a few years ago, but I was a little bit not sure if this is something I want to try. Just the name put me off a little bit, eggnog. But the more I've read about it, and the more I always see it on, American Christmas films and TV, and I'm like, okay, I think I could get on board, especially maybe, with a bit of rum in there. Yeah. I think it might be something that I'd like to try. So I need to keep an eye out for it. I might try and make my own this year, but could be disastrous, but I might give it a go when December kicks in.
Yeah. I've never tried to make my own, but I love eggnog and I like it quite a bit. And I'll tell you the way I do it. A lot of people don't like the consistency because it can tend to be a little thick. So a lot of people thin it with milk. But what I do is I use, I'll pour it in like a coffee cup, and then I'll put whipped cream on top, and then sprinkle a little, and then put a little nutmeg on top of the whipped cream, and then grab a cinnamon stick and use it to stir.
That sounds great. That sounds really good.
And it's like a dessert in a cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And that's the way I drink it.
Mm, that sounds lovely. Yeah, there's that nutmeg and cinnamon finish. Yeah, I think I'd pour cinnamon on everything pretty much during December.
Yeah, you use that cinnamon stick to mix up the whipped cream and the eggnog, and that kind of thins it a little bit, but not like the milk. The milk really thins it out. And I don't like it that thin. I like it a little thicker, and that kind of thins it out and kind of cuts some of that thickness out, because I don't like a real thick drink either. And that's like the whipped cream's like the perfect add to make it the right consistency, and then the nutmeg and cinnamon just kind of give it a little extra Christmas spice to it. So
yeah, that sounds good. I've always had a bit of a, you know, not a hatred, but a bit of a gross factor, I suppose, about creamy drinks ever since I was young. And, you know, part of milkshakes I was fine with, but I don't know, over here we have quite a few creamy alcoholic drinks, like Advocar, and there's a sort of a drink called a Snowball we have over here, which is this creamy spirit called Advocar and lemonade. And I think I remember trying it when I was a teenager at a Christmas party and just finding it the most disgusting thing in the world. It's just so thick and creamy and cloying and gross. And I think, you know, I was a teenager and it was alcohol. Try a bit of this. One of my aunties somewhere gave it to me. And I thought, nope, that's disgusting. And ever since, I've sort of had a bit of a, natural aversion to creamy drinks. But I have, over the last few years, started to test that a little bit and try a few more different creamy cocktails and things. And so I'm up for eggnog this year. I think it's time.
Well, you'll have to let me know what you think about it after you try definitely. It and see. See, I'm that way with hot drinks. I'm not a big hot drink person, like hot chocolate or hot apple cider, hot tea, hot chocolate or hot apple cider. I like the flavors. Nothing wrong with flavors. That's just not big on a hot drink.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say that before. Yeah, I'm a hot drink fan. I don't know if it's just, if you're British, you have to be in a way, just to, if you have to live in Britain, you have to have tea and hot chocolate, hot mulled cider and mulled wine at Christmas.
Yeah. See, this year, I think I'm just going to kind of force myself to start drinking that stuff, you know, just because it's like, come on, man, you're adult. You can drink hot stuff, you know, and just so I can enjoy it, especially the hot apple cider. My mom makes this, it's called caramel apple cider stuff. Mm. And she makes this other thing called Christmas tea, which is it's called Christmas tea, but it's not got any tea in it. It's it's like an apple cider with like oranges and lemons and.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like different flavors.
Yeah. And it tastes really great, but. The only reason I don't drink it's because it's served warm. And
yeah,
so I think I'm just going to have to buckle down and just start drinking that stuff around Christmas. And plus too, I'm getting older, so I'm getting colder a lot easier than I used to be.
You need that warmth to give you a boost during the day. Yeah,
I probably won't. Michael Christelman, an avid Christmas podcast listener, he'll be mad at me, but I probably won't ever drink coffee. I just can't stand the taste of it. So
I'm not a coffee man. I love love the smell of coffee. Absolutely adore the smell of it.
Yep.
But the taste, the only way I can drink coffee, which I have done in the past because it's the only thing that's been there and I need a hot drink, has been with so much milk and sugar that it's basically just a dessert with a little bit of coffee flavor. It's like a, you know, a coffee flavored milk basically. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not for me. It's something for me to smell. My wife drinks it. I'll make it for her in the morning and I'll stand there and sniff it before she drinks it. But then I'll have my tea as well. I'm a proper Englishman in that I have to have my English breakfast tea, Yorkshire tea, which is my go-to here. And I drink quite a few each day. I probably get to about 4 or 5 teas a day, especially in wintertime.
I'm from the South, so all our tea is cold and it's sweet.
Yeah, I can't get over that. Whenever I watch on again, American TV or films, and they're like, oh yeah, I'll have a tea. And then they start pouring this ice concoction. I'm like, that's not a tea. No, you need a mug, you need a kettle. But it's a different beast. I've got a couple of people that I know who've, you know, American, who've moved over here when I used to know them a few years ago, and introducing them to tea and trying to get them to drink tea was one of my favorite things to do. To sort of keep forcing them to, and eventually one of them actually did quite, you know, they'd come into the round to our flat and I'd be like, want a cup of tea? Want a cup of tea? And they'd actually agree to it rather than have it forced upon them.
My sister-in-law came to visit from California and we would go out to eat, and she'd ask for tea. She just asked for tea, and she'd get it, and it'd be sweet every time. And she's like,
"Yeah,
they keep giving me sweet tea." And I'm like, "Yeah, because when you ask for tea around here, they assume you want it sweet. If you don't want it sweet, you have to ask for unsweet tea."
Yeah,
you know, because the go-to is sweet, you know, and so there's some places around here where the tea is so sweet it can double for pancake syrup.
See, I quite like the sound of that, actually. I've got a sweet tooth, so maybe that would actually turn my head a little bit. It's something, another cultural difference between the UK and the US is something that I've sort of only picked up on in the last few years reading about it online, is that Americans don't really have kettles. You don't really have a electric kettle as a normal appliance, whereas every house in Britain, if you go to a house in Britain that doesn't have a plug into the wall kettle, you fill up with water from the tap, press the button, and it boils your water, it would be weird. It would be weird to go into a house where they didn't have a kettle. But speaking to American friends and other American podcasters and just seeing it online as just not being a thing, it just sort of shocked me that this wasn't a part of the natural kitchen of an American house.
I remember my grandparents having one like that. It had a little glass bulb on the top and then would glow red. And I remember they having one, but most people it's just coffee pots or those Keurigs where you can just brew single cups and things like that. And or the people that are really into coffee get the French press kind of thing going on. And people sun brew tea. That's pretty popular in the summer around here. Yeah. But yeah, those little kettles, I haven't seen one of those in years. You might be able to find one like at the antique store or something.
Yeah, it's strange. And here, we use them for I use them for everything. You know, if we're boiling an egg, if we're, I don't know, we have making noodles, we just boil the water in there first and then into the hot pan it goes, just speeds up the process. I couldn't imagine life without my kettle, you know. I wouldn't be able to get up in the morning for one, you know, having to make my tea. But it would be a daily struggle.
Well, I might have to look in and get one of those, see how quick it speeds up that process. We're all the time doing spaghetti and ravioli and boiling noodles, things like that. And we just fill up a big old pot and turn the stove on and wait.
Yeah. So. If you've got a decent stove, I think my stove's a bit rubbish. Maybe that's why as well. It takes a long, long, long time for our stove to get hot.
We don't have too terribly long to wait on ours. It's pretty good, so. What are some maybe American Christmas traditions that's something you would like to try other than eggnog? Is there anything in particular that you've noticed we do in the States that it seems a little bit?
Not so much the some of the Christmas stuff, but some of the, a lot of your food and drink generally, the sort of, glut of different Christmas flavors you get of all sorts of things. Pretty much everything has Christmas additions. I've seen lots of in America. We get a few of those here, and it has become a little bit more common in recent years that you'd get, something that I've been quite obsessed with recently are Christmas crisps, or what you call them, chips, a bag of potato chips. And Christmas crisps here, we call them, have become a bit more common, getting like turkey flavor and I saw some pine tree flavor. We had some not so long ago, but they're still quite rare. Whereas I've seen so many adverts and things online of American flavored, candies and chips and loads of soft drinks as well. Lots of the American flavored soft drinks that I'm kind of obsessed with. I've got, again, quite a sweet tooth, and I have cut massively down on my soft drinks in the last few years because it was probably way too bad for me. I used to drink a lot of soft drinks, but I've managed to cut that down, my soda intake, as you'd say. But whenever I see the adverts online or pictures or videos of all the Christmas, like Pepsis and Coca-Colas and Mountain Dews and things that you guys have, I think I could just down some of that stuff. Some of it looks so nice. The cinnamon flavors I've seen, and there was some more recent ones that Pepsi are bringing out. I can't remember what now, but I remember seeing it on Twitter somewhere and just Googling for about 10 minutes, like, is this available in the UK? Can I get it in the UK anywhere? Apparently, no. We just stuck with our normal Pepsi flavor. We don't even have Pepsi Cherry over here, which I got a bit obsessed with when I went to the US. Me and my sister got obsessed with Pepsi Cherry when we went over there a few years ago. But you can't get that over here. in normal Pepsi Cherry anyway. So mm-hmm. all of those sort of, yeah, those Christmas flavored things, I think there's a lot more in America. And that's something that really, really attracts me. I just wish we could have more of those sorts of things. I just want to, again, as a Christmas obsessive, I'm sure like you are, you know, I just want to try everything Christmas and make everything should be flavored at Christmas. Yeah. But we just don't have as much of that here. It's not as common a thing, unfortunately.
I was at the store yesterday looking to see if the cranberry flavored Sprite was available.
Yeah, that's what I want to try. We don't have that here. I want that.
I didn't see it. And there's also Canadian Dry. They do ginger ale, and they'll have a cranberry flavored ginger ale as well. And I was looking for that, but I don't guess it was available yet. And that stuff, we have it, but man, it gets hard to find because they just don't put out very much of it. And when it's out on the shelves, it goes in a hurry. Now, I will give you... I don't do it as much anymore because I'm a diet soda drinker and it doesn't work as well with diet soda. But if you just buy a regular Pepsi, do you guys have those hard peppermint candies?
Yeah, yeah.
We have them here and I usually use, it's Brock's brand. They're called Starlight Mints, but it's just a hard peppermint candy. If you put one of those peppermints in your mouth and drink a regular Pepsi, you will get Christmas all over the world because that... is two fantastic flavors together. It's like a peppermint soda flavor. And I used to do it all the time as a kid and teenager, but then I kind of got away and I tried it with like a diet soda and it just doesn't work as well.
That sounds great. That's like a proper Christmas trick. Yeah. I'm definitely going to try that this year.
It's like a make your own soda flavor. But yeah, you put that hard peppermint in your mouth while you're drinking a Pepsi. Can't do it with Coke. Coke isn't as sweet as Pepsi is.
No.
And so if you do it with Pepsi, I think you'll enjoy that quite a bit. It's like Christmas hack.
Gonna try that. Yeah, a little Christmas hack. That's it.
Yeah.
And something, again, I think generally as well, I've been over to America a few times when I was younger and a couple of times as an adult. And just, you know, even though I think the British have quite a sort of, you know, we have our chocolate is our big thing. We have lots and lots and lots of different flavors of chocolate and brands of chocolate. And it's very, very sweet compared to some American chocolate. But generally, American sweet tooth is just on another level. You know, the sort of, when I've tried American Pepsi and Coke, and it just tastes a bit sweeter than ours generally. Again, I'm a big fan of Cherry Coke. I don't drink as much anymore. I tried, you know, just to lessen my intake. But when we used to go over to America, the Cherry Coke tasted so much better. I don't know why. It was just maybe just more sugar in there. It was just worse for you, but it tasted better. Me and my sister used to just drink it by the caseload when we went over to America and try and, you know, smuggle cans back in our luggage, you know, throw clothes out and put cans of Cherry Coke in instead because it tasted better than the British stuff. And I think it's probably just, sugar loads. And I think that shows in a lot of the Christmas flavorings you guys have, that real sweet tooth that Americans have.
Yes, we do. We have a sweet tooth and it goes year round. There's a reason that so many Americans fight with obesity. It's just because there's so much of it and it's so much around. it's hard to push away from. We're coming up at the time we're recording this, it's the Sunday before Thanksgiving here in the States, and you know, I'm already thinking about Thanksgiving dinner and it's like, how many calories am I going to put away with a big smile on my face just for Thanksgiving? And it's wonderful, but it is kind of if you step back and look at it, it is kind of gluttonous at the same time, and kind of crazy to be like that. But
sometimes, you know, it's, you've just got to enjoy yourself, don't you? I think, you know, there's no point. I'm not a calorie counter. I'm not someone that spends each day,
me neither,
you know, worrying about this or that, because I just like to eat things that are nice usually. Yeah. And, you know, I try and be healthy here and there. I'm quite active at work. Generally, I'm always on my feet, but I'm not someone that is obsessing over what I'm intaking. I think that should be a bit of a sad day if I had to, you know, wake up and go, okay, how many of these can I eat this morning? Or when I get home, I can have one piece of chocolate or something. This evening I've already had, a very British dinner of sausages and mash. I don't know but basically mashed potato and sausages. Mm-hmm. And then quite a bit of some Dairy Milk Cadbury's Christmas chocolate, which is shaped like little Christmas trees. And now I've got a mince pie as well to finish me off for the evening. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm enjoying what I eat. So as long as I sort of try and balance it out with some vegetables here and there and fruit, I like my fruit, I like my veggies. So I balance it out. But I'm not a calorie counter. It's food is too nice, really, for me to count. Yeah. And you know, talking of Thanksgiving, that's another sort of thing that, even though it's not a Christmas thing, it sort of falls under the seasonal realm of Christmas because of where it is in the year. And every year for quite a few years, because my family are sort of a bit American obsessed, you know, they love America. My parents visit a lot to various places in America. And they'll often do a sort of a Thanksgiving mini dinner, you know, not in the same way. We don't really have the same sort of full blown celebrations that you guys have, but they'll make sure they'll have a little turkey dinner of some kind. And I think this week for Thanksgiving, I'm going to try and rustle up some sort of turkey dinner for me and my wife, just to have it. Okay, let's have a little Thanksgiving celebration, and any excuse to eat turkey, really, for me. Oh, yeah. Any excuse.
Yeah, me too. I love turkey and the sweet potato casserole and the cranberry sauce, and I'm all in on that. And it's stuff we don't eat, but you know, a couple times a year around the holidays, and that just makes it extra special. You talked about the Cadbury chocolates. That's one thing I kind of jealous of you having that around the holidays. The only time we get an influx of Cadbury is around Easter for the eggs.
Yeah.
And then they kind of disappear for the rest of the year. And it's like, man, I could use some of that Cadbury candy around Christmas myself, but
yeah, it is. It is. It's a, you know, it's a, what's the word? A national treasure here, I suppose, Cadbury's chocolates. But I grew up actually not far from where the sort of factory was, where it originally started. And I've been to the Cadbury's factory a few times growing up because it was something near. It was a nice treat. You know, my birthday, I might go there. And they show you around the factory. It's like a little guided tour. And it gives you the sort of history of chocolate, where chocolate was first, you know, grown and founded, how it was brought over to Britain and other countries, how Cadbury's made their brand. And the guy that sort of founded it, Mr. I think his name was John Cadbury, I think his name was the guy that founded it, and how he came to start the business. And then you get to see the sort of factory area and how some of the chocolates are mixed and made. And I remember one of my, you know, happiest memories of childhood, I think I was probably about 8 or 9, I went there. And the one day they were mixing the chocolate, the molten chocolate, and they were handing out loads of little cups of the molten Dairy Milk chocolate, of like, you know, liquid chocolate. So for people to take a drink of, and it was so delicious. I think I went for about 4 or 5 cups. I kept circling around to get more. But yeah, I've always been a bit of a Cadbury's obsessive. And at Christmas, we get quite a few nice things. We get Cadbury's put out little Cadbury's chocolate bars with little mini Christmas trees on, and it's sort of intercrossing white and milk chocolate. So it's two types of chocolate. They do these little chocolate bars, which are like little mini Santas and snowmen, like with truffly chocolate. That's quite nice. And just this year, they put out some new ones, some gingerbread one, and which I haven't tried those ones yet. And another one as well, a peppermint one, I think. And every Christmas as well, ever since I was little, I've always got for my parents a giant bar of Cadbury's, like a, you know, size of a small child bar of of Dairy Milk, which is so big, and the chocolate's so thick. And I don't know what it is about it, but it tastes better when it's thick, like really thick chocolate. And I usually devour that by New Year, usually, or try to.
That's funny. Yeah, it's similar. You talk about it, liking it, the chocolate better when it's thick. Here in the States at Easter time, the big thing is the chocolate bunnies, and you can buy them like hollow or solid. And I've always been big on the hollow bunnies for some reason. It's like, I don't know what it is, but it's like, get the solid bunnies. It just tastes like a brick of chocolate, which you can get anytime. Not that the chocolate tastes any different, but it's something about just the hollow one just works.
It's the feel of it. Yeah. It's something, I don't know, psychological maybe. The same one at Easter, the Cadbury's Easter eggs that me and my wife often, we sort of store a glut of them, because there's something that somehow, even though I'm sure it's the same chocolate, it tastes better in a hollow egg form. Just something about it tastes more crisp or more special. Yeah. I'm not sure what it is. It's maybe it's just psychological.
I think it's the ratios, because this year new Reese's Peanut Butter Cup has come out with these little miniature, they're like an inch long or so shaped, nutcracker shaped peanut butter cups. And they are so good. I mean, it's just Reese's peanut butter and chocolate, but something about the ratio of the chocolate and peanut butter is a little different because of that shape and size, that it's like the sweet spot I guess pun intended, but it was just like this right mixture of peanut butter and chocolate that's just really, really great. And a few years back, Hershey put out these peppermint bark bells, and it's like the right blend of the peppermint bark with the right layer of chocolate on it. And there's a little bite-sized things. You just pop one in your mouth, and it's like, I think it's the ratios. I think candy it just depends on the ratios and the sizing. It just depends on, you know, makes the
yeah,
same thing
definitely.
Taste better. So
I think, yeah, you can get, you know, as you say, sometimes too much. If it's a big block, yeah. It's too gammy for your mouth, too yeah. chewy, too something. Mm-hmm. But you get that little bite size perfection sometimes.
Yeah.
We have a thing over here, which is sort of, again, a bit of a British chocolate favorite called Freddo bars. And they're little tiny, you know, again, probably what, a couple of inches long chocolate bars made by Cadbury's. And they're called Freddos. Actually, I don't even know why they're called Freddos. They're little frogs. It's like a little frog character is what the chocolate's shaped like. And I think he's called Freddo the frog. Uh-huh. Don't know why, but they've been around probably since the 80s, I think. And when they first came out, they were, I think, 10p or something, mm-hmm. you know, quite cheap. And then over the years, they've gone up to now they're like 60, 70p. And it's a bit of a running joke that, you know, I'll remember when Freddos were 10p because it's the same size, but now mm-hmm. they're like, seven times the amount of money. But there's nothing like having a little Freddo bar. There's something, just they're quite small. It's just dairy milk chocolate in a little frog shape, but they're just sort of perfect for a little snack. Again, well, for me, for dunking in my tea. I like quite like dunking chocolate in my English tea. Just something about it makes it a bit melty. It sort of melts the top layer, and then you get like a crisp middle. But just that perfect little bite size is just so nice. And often if I'm, you know, stopping to get a gas for my car, I'll just pick one up and just make sure I've got, you know, a little Freddo to take to work with me for a snack.
Oh, nice. Let's switch gears here. We are, I've always kind of thought this, you know, interacting with you on social medias and through the podcast and stuff, I kind of feel like we're cut from pretty much the same cloth. We have a lot of the same interests and everything. We're just on the opposite ends of the Atlantic, but let's talk a little bit about Christmas entertainment from the UK. And for my listeners that are maybe not quite as familiar with some of the better UK specials as far as Christmas specials, what would be one show or Christmas special or movie that you would recommend them like cutting their teeth on as an introduction to?
I think there's a few contenders in that particular bracket. If you're thinking about sort of classic British Christmas shows, you've got things like Only Fools and Horses and Blackadder, and more modern ones like Gavin and Stacey. But for me, I think if you're looking at an ideal way to sort of, you know, what is British humour, and British Christmas specials would be to go for the very first Christmas special of the Royal Family. Are you aware of the Royal Family?
No, I'm not.
No, the Royal Family is a show that came out, I think it must have been early, maybe late 90s, early 2000s here in Britain. It had about four or five seasons and then a lot of Christmas specials. There's about six, I think, different or seven Christmas specials that came out during the run and then after the sort of series ended. And it's so a family called the Royal Family, but spelled R-O-Y-L-E. And they're very working class, very relatively poor. They're sort of indicative of a certain type of British person who, you know, sits in front of the TV all day. The dad is very grumpy. He watches television, sort of orders his wife about and, you know, loves her, but still a little bit bossy, farts a lot, a little bit gross. The mom, Barb, is very sweet natured, a little bit put upon, but, you know, just gets by. And their children, who are not the brightest sparks in the world. And it's just basically, it's always set in the living room. They're sat around watching television. And the comedy is between, you know, the interplay between the characters. And the Christmas special of the first series ends with their daughter's pregnant. And it's Christmas Day, she's pregnant. And she goes into labor in the house on Christmas Day. And it's just a really funny slice of sort of British life comedy. You know, it's lots of very sarcastic humor, lots of very grumpy humor. The dad being very grumpy, you know, gets his wife to open his own Christmas presents because he's too lazy to get up and open them. He has a go at their nan all the time. He's constantly moaning at her and groaning because it's his wife's mom who he doesn't get on with and wants to always watch what she wants to watch on TV. But amidst that, there's this real sweetness, which I think a lot of British shows do really well at Christmas. The best, Gavin and Stacey and those sort of classic British Christmas specials have sentimentality mixed in with the comedy. So it's not just, you know, a half hour or hour of funny. Mm-hmm. There's the comedy and then there's some sweet moments of, you know, family, of characters opening up to each other. And in this special, it's the dad is the one that's sort of stuck with the daughter while she's going into labor, while the mom goes to try and get an ambulance. And he's, again, this really grumpy, sort of quite horrible person, but he loves his daughter and he, you know, he's there for her. And there's this really nice, sweet sentimentality that I think really sums up for me the British Christmas special, that you get a lot of humor and then a little bit of sentimentality mixed in there. And I think Gavin and Stacey is the other one that I would say as a recommend. I don't know if you know Gavin and Stacey.
That's James Coburn.
James Corden, yeah.
Corden.
Yeah, the presenter. Yeah. That was his like first big thing in Britain. And it's a show about two families, one from Wales, one from Essex, which is by London. And this couple that sort of fall in love, the girl from Wales, the boy from London, and then their two families having to get along and mix together. And James Corden plays the best friend. And again, it's very, very funny show, very classic British humor, lots of sarcasm and irony. And the Christmas special is exactly that. Lots of real funny moments, but then a few moments of sentimentality, of sweetness mixed in there, you know, a moment where you're not laughing for 5 minutes, you're maybe even crying possibly at something quite sweet. So I think, you know, for me, the Royal Family and Gavin and Stacey, those sum up, I think, what a good British Christmas special is. And having on my podcast now, I keep reviewing British Christmas specials. So recently I did one called Friday Night Dinner, which is again about a family. I'm looking at Outnumbered for an upcoming one, and all of them seem to have, in the midst of all the comedy, a little moment of sentimentality, a little bit of, you know, might have a little bit of a cry on Christmas Day here, which I think just sort of sums up that mixture of emotions I think you sometimes get on Christmas quite nicely.
That sounds great. I'll definitely have to check those out. I've heard a little bit about Gavin and Stacey just here and there. I think maybe Tez the podcast covered.
Yeah, I think they covered the Christmas special.
Yeah, so I'll have to check those out. I like that you're talking about the sentimentality, because it seems like a lot of the Christmas specials in the States, just to kind of contrast them, it's, you know, especially the sitcoms, it's a lot of funny, and then you just kind of get a sigh of relief, you know, that all the chaos is over, but it doesn't really get sentimental. It may end with like some warm words or a warm settlement, but that's kind of about as far as they go. They don't really get that sentimental to, you know, really stir your emotions. You
know? No, that's something I've definitely noticed. That again, I watch a lot of Christmas specials, as I'm sure you do, because it's just part of my tradition. I like to watch as many as possible, and some I watch again and again and again. And definitely the American ones, they like you say, they might have like a moment of, you know, oh, this is what Christmas is all about, or this nice family moment, but not enough to sort of, you know, try and get those tears coming like a lot of British ones do.
Yeah.
Even in the sort of oddest moments. So again, I recently reviewed Him and Her, which is another very good British TV show about a couple who live in a flat. You know, they spend the whole time just hanging out in the flat, and their creepy neighbor comes over. The girl's sister, who's just a horrible person, comes over with a horrible boyfriend, and you just see their interactions. And in the Christmas special, it's, you know, lots of funny, lots of silliness, lots of the anarchy of Christmas Day. And then the guy's dad turns up, and he hasn't seen his dad for years, and the dad buys him for Christmas a book which he used to read him when he was a baby, like a book that he used to read to him at night. And it's just this moment where both characters start, you know, tearing up, and you're just not expecting it at all. It's that sort of that little sweetness, that little sentimentality that, you know, really sort of makes you almost cry on Christmas Day. But I think, you know, that's quite nice to me, because I think that's what Christmas is sometimes about. You know, you do get those moments around Christmas where you feel a bit emotional or a little bit sentimental. You think back on, you know, times when you were young or your family. It's like that bit in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation I always think about, where he's sat in the attic watching the old Christmas videos, and it's that sort of feeling of, you know, oh, remember this, remember that, that nostalgia, those family, those things that can get to you. And I think British Christmas specials do that quite well. They sort of just give you a moment where you're like, okay, this is, you know, Christmas is also about family and sentimentality, and sometimes you, it's okay to have a little cry at that.
You look back, you mentioned that Christmas Vacation scene, and it's like he's watching those home movies and you think, well, my kids are where I was then, and, you know, my parents are where I am now, and, you know, and you just kind of see how life has progressed, and
you miss
how it was, and then you also know it's going to continue to change and evolve, and so you just kind of got to hold on to Christmas as it is and as it presents itself this year, and
absolutely
and enjoy it.
That's the thing. I'm definitely sort of, you know, it's hard to do sometimes, but I try and, you know, cherish the moments as much as possible, and especially around Christmas, that's so important, I think, to just not worry too much about, oh, you know, what am I doing in 2 weeks' time for Christmas, or what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. It's just enjoy the moments that you're in, and sort of those little festive times you get, and, you know, obviously plan if you can. Planning is important, but but enjoying it whilst you're there, rather than thinking about, okay, what's next after this bit, you know. I think that's just as important sometimes. I think sometimes you can get wrapped up too much, and, you know, I've seen family and friends do this where they're just, you know, having a party or gathered together for dinner or something, and they're thinking about the next day or the next week or something, rather than actually being there in the moment.
A musical artist I had on the podcast, Luke McMaster, he has a new Christmas song, new Christmas album out, and it's really good. But he has an original song on there called Christmas Present, and that's the name of the album. And it's not about a Christmas present, like a gift you give, but it's about living Christmas in the present. You know, especially after the year we've been through of 2020, it's like, you know, just whatever Christmas is this year, just be sure you're there for it.
Yeah.
And I've kind of had this little bit of this evolution going on when I have four kids, and when they were like in programs and musicals at school and stuff, I was the dad, you know, wanting to film it and record it and things like that, you know. And then I've gotten to where I don't do that anymore at all. It's like, cause I don't want to see it behind the lens.
Yeah.
I just want to see it for myself and then hang on to it. And, you know, and it's like, well, you don't have it on video. It's like, well, the school always videos them, and you can buy a copy, you know, for a few dollars and help school out. And that way I can like be there and actually watch
it. Just watch it without worrying, is the camera on, does this look all right?
Right. trying to keep up with everything. And plus two, it's just having that screen, even though that screen is seeing what your eyes see, just having that screen in between, you know, myself and whichever kid was up on the stage, you know, it just doesn't feel like it was the right thing to do. And you know, this year for everybody, Christmas is going to be a little bit different, but I keep saying different doesn't mean worse. You know, it's going to be different, and, you know, make it the best you can. And then, you know, fingers crossed next Christmas, we'll have things back to what we used most more normally have. And
and
maybe, you know, this Christmas will spur, you know, some new traditions of some kind. And
absolutely.
Things and one tradition I am going to swipe from you guys over there in the UK for my kids this year is the Christmas cracker.
I think one of my podcasts in December, I'm going to talk about that. I've been doing some research about Christmas crackers. Yeah,
I don't know why they never took off here in the States. You know,
I'm not sure. They're just fun. They're really fun little. Sort of, you know, a little moment of fun for everyone around the Christmas table.
They are. I mean, Come the 4th of July around here, we are setting everything on fire and exploding fireworks all over the place. It's like, why wouldn't we do something that's kind of similar? Because we'll have these things that you pull a string and it pops and blows out confetti everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and the little kids do them. And it's like, well, why wouldn't we do anything like that around Christmas time? And it comes with a little prize inside.
Exactly. Yeah. Can you get them in the stores though? Are they sort of, you know, can you buy them now? Are they
you can find
available?
You can find them at some like world market type stores.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. They're not hard to find. You just have to go looking for them. So I'm planning on getting some with either like some chocolates in it or probably some chocolates. My kids are a little bit old for some of the toys that come in them.
Yeah. They usually, it's a bit of sort of, again, every house in Britain generally will have crackers, but every house also knows that the toys are usually a bit rubbish or you get weird stuff in them. So the traditional thing here is that you always get a paper hat, a paper crown. Mm-hmm. And so everyone has to sit around the dinner table wearing their paper crown, apart from maybe like the grumpy dad or granddad who's like, I'm not wearing my paper crown until we all guilt them into putting it on. A terrible joke, some sort of really bad joke, you know, something like, I can't think of a terrible joke now. See, they're so bad, I can't think of one. And some sort of toy or gizmo. So quite often there'll be things like weird things sometimes, like mini nail clippers I've had before in them, keychains, mini like hand mirrors, but again, tiny, tiny, so that you can't really see much in them. Dice. But you do occasionally, you know, you can get sort of nicer ones. You can get sort of fancy ones that have more interesting things. And one year, actually, for Christmas, we had some which had these little reindeer toys. They were wind-up reindeer. Uh-huh. So they're only, again, a couple of inches high. And you each got one with different colors on them. And you wind up the back, put them on the table, and then they sort of walk across the table. You know, it's like a little mechanical gizmo. Yeah. And they're meant to race. They're called racing reindeers. And so I was at my sister's house for Christmas, and they got two young nephews. This was a few years back, probably about 5-6 years ago. And he was quite young then. He's a teenager now. And we all lined up our reindeers to have a little post-Christmas dinner race. sort of line them all up, you know, put them down at the same time. And then my mom, who's very, very competitive, or my family are quite competitive at the best of times, went to, as a joke, but also I think she wanted to win, knock my reindeer off the table. And as she did that, she knocked my nephew's reindeer flying off the table, and he just burst into tears. Oh, he was only like, you know, six or seven years old. Yeah. And he just absolutely like thought, well, like, why did my nan just destroy my reindeer at the race? And so we had to spend then the next 10 minutes trying to get him to console and calm him down because nan was trying to knock his reindeer over.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, having those reindeer races across the table.
So that was quite nice. My. So those sort of, you know, it was like a little game as well after the crackers had been pulled for the family. I
might have to look for something like that. The ones I've seen all have like here in the States, it's either chocolates, or the other ones I've seen had like crayons and a coloring page in them. And like one had like, I guess, a real blunt pair of scissors for cutting out stuff and things. And it's just kind of like, like my kids are little. My youngest one would probably enjoy that. But I was trying to.
Yeah, not quite for the older ones.
Yeah, the older ones would want something a little bit more. So that's why I was thinking maybe the ones with some like chocolates or something in there. So
yeah, no, that's probably. I think I'd prefer some chocolates in there. One of the other things I just remembered, you'd get in them are these little weird. Well, there'd be a couple of things. There's one. It was like a little puzzle where you had two triangle metal pieces stuck together, and it's like a magic trick. And if you turn it in a certain way, they unhook, and then. You have to, so it's like, can you get them apart? So you usually spend about, you know, 15 minutes at the Christmas dinner table trying to figure out how to get these two little bits of metal apart, and getting more and more frustrated because the instructions are on a tiny bit of paper and you don't know what's going on. And the other thing was these little, I think we call them slippery fish here. I don't know if they're a thing in America. It's like a tiny little piece of almost like cellophane or plastic, really, really thin, in the shape of a fish. And you put it on the middle of your palm. And depending on how it curls up, that's your future, or that's the emotion you're feeling. So, you know, if it curls up tail first, then you're an angry person. Mm-hmm. If it goes head first, you're a loving person. If it goes all the way around, then you're a lucky person. Just like a little weird, almost like a mood ring sort of game.
Yeah.
But just odd little things like that you'd get in crackers, and a tiny little bit of entertainment, you know, at the dinner table, whereas everyone's going around saying, oh, you know, I'm a happy person. I'm a lucky person. Just odd little things like that, which are quite sweet, actually. And, you know, it sort of makes for that post-dinner a bit of fun, especially for the kids, obviously playing around with these silly little toys.
Right. It just gives you, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of entertainment, and that's well worth it.
Or very old fashioned entertainment, but that's quite nice, you know, without the telly on or something.
I'm one of them that I don't like the television on very much unless I'm watching it, you know. I go to some people's houses and it's on and you're trying to talk, it'd be on in the other room and you're trying to talk and have a good time, and it's like, can we just go turn that off if nobody's watching it? But they just want to have it on.
Just has to be on. Yeah.
I just don't understand it. You know, nobody's watching it, just turn the thing off, you know.
No, I'm a fan. I'm the same. I like music. You know, if I'm hanging out with friends and stuff, put on an album or a playlist in the background or something. I'm quite a Christmas. I make lots of Christmas playlists for myself. And if ever we have friends over or family, I'll put one of my playlists on in the background. Adds a nice atmosphere.
Yeah, I do that too. I'll have either be streaming some at the holidays. I'll be streaming some Christmas playlist either on off the TV and, you know, letting it play, or, you know, off the, you know, Bluetooth speaker or something like that, and turn it down real low. We work a lot of puzzles around Christmas time, so a lot of times it's the music's playing real light and we're sitting around the table putting a jigsaw puzzle together, and
that's always nice.
That's a good time too. Speaking of music, that's something else that that's a big tradition there in the UK, is the Christmas number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, around in the States, it's not that big a deal, you know, what song's number one at Christmas time. And it's not even always a Christmas song. It's just whichever's is number one on Christmas Day. And
yeah, I'm not sure why it's such a big thing over here. I don't even know. I don't think back in the sort of 60s and 70s, I don't think in the 60s it was such a big thing. I think it was the 70s when it became a big British thing because there was a string of big Christmas hits in the 70s here, Slade, and Wizard and Mud, quite a lot of sort of bands in the 70s released Christmas songs. And I think that sort of, you know, kicked up a bit of fuss around Christmas for them people to be excited about what's going to be number one at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And actually I did an episode on the Christmas number ones last year, and I only got up to, I think, the year 2000, because it was such a big topic. I'm gonna have to go back to that, I think, probably next year and look at the more recent stuff, because it is there's a lot of buzz around it. I think it sort of dropped away in recent years with streaming and everything. Right. I think it sort of changed the way that is seen, but there's still a little bit of buzz about it. And quite often here we have novelty hits at Christmas. We have tracks that get to number one that are sort of from kids' TV or weird characters. I think last year's number one was, again, a very, very British idea. This comedy, I think he's a YouTuber guy. He calls himself Lad Baby. And he and his wife make, you know, funny videos of their life with their little kid. They've got a small child, and it's, you know, very silly videos they make. And they recorded a cover, if I'm getting this right, of I Love Rock and Roll. But they sang I Love Sausage Rolls. Mm-hmm. Is sausage rolls a thing in America? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Not really.
No, sausage roll to explain now. See, it's so British. Sausage rolls are pretty much what it sounds like, a sort of sausage meat in the middle of pastry. So like a bready sort of pastry that you wrap around it and then cook. And they're very popular here as, like, you know, a lunch thing. You know, lots of pastry places and shops. There's a chain called Greg's that makes sausage rolls, and people just pick them up for lunch. He sang this song, I Love Sausage Rolls, and that got to number one somehow. It was for charity. I think a lot of the money went to charity, which is very nice.
Yes.
But is that sort of thing, that weird, nothing to do with Christmas. The video he made was Christmassy, like him eating lots of sausage rolls, I think, and wrapping them up for Christmas. But it's just that odd, obsession here with what's going to be at number one, which is quite interesting and exciting. You know, I remember as a kid really being excited about waiting, you know, to find out what was Christmas number one, and wanting certain songs to be Christmas number one as well. But yeah, never really took off in America, it seems. I'm not sure why.
I don't ever remember growing up being like the number one song ever being like that big a deal. I mean, it is a big deal to people in the industry, but you know, culturally, I don't remember people really, you know, celebrating any like number one song. I remember people listening to like Casey Kasem's top 40 and seeing where you're at. It was more of the, like, what was the top 40 and who's moving up and who's moving down was, you know, just kind of the placement and the ebbs and flows of the charts was more of a subject of interest, at least with the people that I hung around with more than, more than what actually was number one, unless there was a song that was like staying right there at number one for an extraordinary amount of time. Something unusual, but it seemed to me like it was always this, the ebbs and flows of the numbers. And the biggest thing around here for Christmas that's similar is the box office. Who's going to win the box office over Christmas? You know, which movie is going to take home the Christmas box office for that, you know, Christmas weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And that could just be my peer group more focused on that than anything. But I remember seeing lots of articles, you know, and even back, you know, before COVID and stuff, reading articles in August about what studios are putting what movies in what place to, you know, get to that big Christmas box office, and watching, you know, like it's like when Star Wars, when this last trilogy was going to be, you know, all Christmas releases. You know, watching the other studios like pull back their hit movies and release them earlier just to avoid that money drain.
The clash, yeah.
Yeah, of Star Wars. And then when but what was really strange was it the second Star Wars movie that came out when Jumanji and The Greatest Showman came out as well. You know, Star Wars opened up way bigger than those movies did. But Jumanji and The Greatest Showman lasted so long into January.
Yeah.
And their legs were so long. I remember that being a big deal. It's like, well, Star Wars won the Christmas weekend, but rest of December and into early January was, you know, the first Jumanji, not the first Jumanji movie, but Welcome to the Jungle and The Greatest Showman. And I think The Greatest Showman even was in the top three or five into February. You know, because people, I guess, were going back to see it so much.
And yeah, that was just such a big hit.
Yeah.
Is it a thing in America? I'm sure I've heard about this before, that going to the cinema on Christmas Day is a bit of a...
Yes. Thanksgiving.
A tradition.
Yeah, Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. But Christmas Day, it is a big tradition. My family never did because we have so much family stuff going on and multiple families to see, but it is a big deal to, you know, you do Christmas morning, Christmas breakfast, and then after lunchtime, go see a movie. But that is a big tradition for a lot of people.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're all closed here on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the cinemas close here because I've never done that and don't know any friends that did that. I've been on the day after before. So we have Boxing Day, which is our sort of post Christmas Day bank holidays for everyone to have a day off and sort of probably just get over Christmas a little bit. And I've been a few times on Boxing Day to see films with friends, usually as a sort of, you know, teenager. But Christmas Day was, it's not that for us. It was, you know, cinemas closed.
It's a big tradition. It's one of those to where you'd have to buy your tickets 2 or 3 weeks in advance just to get them, because if, you know, if there was a big movie coming out, you'd have to go, you know, and you weren't, you know, vigilant enough to get on there and get your tickets bought, then you just have to go see something else, or you were just out of luck altogether.
Yeah.
That's the Christmas Day movie. And it's not always a Christmas movie either. It's usually something like Star Wars or, you know, some kind of family movie, you know, like Mary Poppins a few years back, released right on Christmas Day.
And something for all the family to go see, I suppose, isn't it? It's what we're looking for there, that market.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that is a big tradition. And Thanksgiving is one as well. People, you know, do the Thanksgiving at lunchtime, and then after lunch, a lot of them head to the theater to see something. So, But probably not going to be that way this year, unfortunately.
No, I don't think so. No, but, sadly not.
Yeah. Well, Adam, I really appreciate you joining me here on Christmas Clatter. Let everybody know where they can find you and find Merry Britmas at.
Yes. So if you want to listen to my podcast, you can search Merry Britmas at pretty much all good podcast apps. I have a website as well, merrybritmas.co.uk. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. If you just search for my podcast, you'll find me. I often post British Christmas things every day, whether it's videos or old British adverts or all sorts of things. So yeah, check me out, like me on Instagram, and listen to my podcast.
Yes. If you guys enjoy Christmas Clatter, you'll definitely like Merry Britmas. And I'll have all those links to his website and his social medias in the show notes and on my website, ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. That way you guys are just a couple of taps away. And well, Adam, thanks so much for joining me here on Christmas Clatter, and you have a happy Christmas.
And a happy Christmas to you, too.
Thank you for listening to Christmas Clatter. Please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Send us an email at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. And as always, remember to keep Christmas hope alive every day.
Thank you for listening to the Christmas Podcast Network.
Merry Britmas is a delightful podcast. Now let me reword that. Make it sound a little bit more British. Merry Britmas is a brilliant podcast. Not full of any kind of rubbish. That's terrible.